pressing the buttons song, as is clear. I have nearly pressed all our buttons. This is our best attended Q2 Live yet, which is really exciting because I have brought Ken Robinson's book with me on holiday. I've actually brought two copies and the audiobook so that we can discuss it together as a warm-up for our as a warm-up for our book club that we are launching in a couple of weeks. So I believe we are now live on LinkedIn, which is really exciting. Two more people in the waiting room. I'm doing my best not to tell my children off in front of you guys, but I really would prefer if they weren't in the screen right now.
So what you need is for us to go hello to them in the background so that they know they're being watched, yeah?
They just, you know what? They honestly, they feel part of it. Hi, Shola, what a treat.
Hello,
How are you
hello.
doing?
I'm good. I'm good. Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much
Lucky
for the
me.
invitation. Yeah, I thought I'd
Okay.
show up today.
Let's do it. Let's do it. We're going to start with introductions because we've got some great people in this room. Are you ready? Give me a thumbs up. Okay, I'm going to ask you, please, within 90 seconds. Oh, Claire, that's adorable.
Very nice.
Please,
Oh my God, what have I done?
to please
I
introduce
didn't
yourself.
do that myself. I don't know how or what happened there.
I have a feeling it's going to be a raucous one today. 90 seconds, please, to introduce yourself and your tutoring context. Richard, you're first.
Oh, crumbs, yeah. Hi, I'm Richard Marsh. I spend most of my life being actually a social worker, but I also am a tutor stroke emotional support worker for an organization called Nudge.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you. Claire, go for it.
I'm Claire Knight. I'm a private maths tutor since 2016. I also do some work for Nudge as an education expert,
Fantastic.
maths, and I've gone completely online since COVID, and I love it.
Fantastic. Thank you. Sarah, go for it.
I run Read to Grow Tuition. I specialise in 11 plus and handwriting. Just started my level 7 dyslexia course, so hopefully I'll be able to offer dyslexia specialist teaching and assessing from next year.
Fantastic. I'm really curious about to hear more about that course. And I'm curious to know whether you'll go ahead and do the assessment piece also to be an assessor. Maybe we could explore that another time. Yeah, it's a really rich theme. Thank you. Anna, go for it.
Hi everyone, I'm Anna. I am based in London, but I teach online to the whole planet, really. I teach Latin and classical Greek, and I do mostly one-to-one tuition, but sometimes also groups, particularly for the younger ages.
Fantastic. We have three Latin tutors, as far as I know, in the community at the moment. So that's really exciting to be building that up. Somebody actually posted something in QT News, I think, or chat in Latin yesterday that my GCSE C did not help me to translate. So if you could go in there for me, please, Anna.
I have not seen
and
it, and I have a
yeah.
good antenna for Latin, but I have
You
not
do?
seen it, so I
Okay,
haven't come across it.
I'm gonna ping you later on when I'm sitting by the pool.
Do,
Okay,
do.
Brian, go for it.
Hi, I'm Brian Dickinson. I am in Sussex, and I'm almost a full-time tutor now. I teach history and sociology, and I'm just getting into 11 plus as well now. So hopefully I'll get more of that work.
Brian, you are inspiring me. Brian and I have been talking for about 18 months now, and every time we check in, he's like up in the tutoring state. Love it.
Thank you. Yeah.
Mark.
Mainly down to YouTube, Julia. So, mainly down to you.
I'm not taking that. Mark, the problem, my dear, is this. You've only got 90 seconds.
Okay. I can do this in 2 seconds.
Come on in.
Mark Reed, hi everyone. Yeah, and been looking forward to this. Hi, Julia. I am a tutor. I also work in industry as well, part-time. I'm balancing both. I'm with the profs, Julia.
Minute, put yourself aside.
Sorry.
Get £50 a month. Get yourself
Lauren, I
paid.
think that's your background. Thanks.
Oh, okay. So yes, and just with the profs, business subjects, business related, business management, things like that, a variety. And yeah, hey, I really like it. I really like the online thing as well. So missing face to face, but this is good.
It is good. And blending the two is lovely as well, isn't it? So yeah. Anna, Julie's just put the post up in Latin in the chat there. If you could please let us know what it means, you'll be putting me out of my misery. I'll be able to do well tonight.
Is this the whole thing?
That's what's there.
It's a bit of funny Latin. It says, therefore, choose life. But I don't know if this is from Transporting or something, because that's the place where I've heard this quote. And so you may live, and your, well, this is seed, but I guess they mean offspring here. I don't know where this quote is from. So choose life and live and let your descendants live. I don't know. I'm going to have to Google this now because I'm intrigued.
Very good. Thank you. Julie, go for it.
I'm Julie, JSC tuition, science tuition, Key Stage 3 GCSE, completely online and occasionally gobby.
But mostly in support of all the good things.
Yeah, I'm getting gobby now. I'm getting gobby.
Yeah, she does walk around with a wet fish just in case someone needs a slap. Dola!
Oh, sorry, I was trying to get the mute button. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm Shola Alabi, and I have been in the tuition space since 2006. I tutor and I run tutoring centres. I have a number of tutors that we work together, and recently dabbled into digital marketing, affiliate marketing, and I'm loving it. Thank you for having me here.
I love the enthusiasm. It's overflowing today.
May I just interrupt?
I think you should.
Yes. I did not recognize this being out of context and with all the emojis in it, but it seems to be from the Deuteronomy in the Bible, actually. Okay. And it's such a message about living and your offspring and choose life. I really thought this was somebody translating Transporting. What's that strange coincidence there? Yeah,
I see.
So there you go. It's from the Latin Bible. Yeah.
Very cool. Thank you. Helen, go for it.
Yes, you do. I've been on another call this morning with another Helen, and it just confuses me. When
you are actually the only Helen in the room right now. You're having a very good hair day.
Thank you. I'm Helen. I tutor GCSE and A-level maths. I am 90% online. I do some alternative provision work in person. I am probably just as gobby as Julie, if not more. I am definitely quirky. That came up a lot.
I'm not having a gobby competition, girls. I'm not.
Okay, both of us gobby in the same way, in the best way.
But it's okay, because Odette can take you both.
Not touching that. I've been part of QT since very, very early on. You'll find me in most QT circles. You'll find me on LinkedIn. I'm also teaching. I'm also speaking at the tutoring conference at the end of October. If you actually want to come and meet me in person and see that I have legs. Anything else about me?
No, but it's really good that you clarified that. Thank you.
I've got legs.
Lauren, go for it. Lauren Danston.
Lauren says, hi all. I'll introduce myself here as I'm in the office, as you'll hear. I've been tutoring for 7 years. I've been tutoring English and business.
I'm sorry, can I pause you? Can you do it in a Scottish accent, please?
No. Absolutely not. I've lost it now. I've been tutoring English and business, now pivoting to confidence and academic skills over the last year. Great to see you all. I'm 80% online.
Gospel.
Hello, everybody. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I'm Gospel, and I have been tutoring since 2007, and it's evolved, which I started tutoring maths and the sciences. And now I have also included supporting the children and their parents with their mental well-being and also personal finance. So I tend to focus on the under 25s years old. So I tutor maths and science GCSE. and then chemistry A level. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks, Gospel. Karen, are you with us? Are you able to contribute?
Yes,
I am. Go for it.
Good morning. I'm currently located in the Eastern Caribbean, the Twin Island Republic of Trinidad and Tobago. So I'm still a little bit groggy and sleepy, so please excuse me. I have been tutoring online for the past 3 years. I teach English to speakers of other languages. I have been on Preply and iTalki for 3 years and just started transitioning to becoming completely independent. And prior to tutoring online, I have had and still have, but to a very, very small degree, I have been a medical massage therapist for 23 years in private practice. And along came COVID and destroyed my career. And upon the urging of a friend in Bursa in Turkey, he suggested that I start teaching English online. So I have currently six TESOL certifications, one of which is OFQAL, which is supposed to be the best in the world. Thank God for that. It has helped to keep me gainfully employed and off the streets, so to speak. So it's been 3 years ongoing. Love it with a passion. Love teaching English to speakers of other languages. It's very rewarding. However, the teaching platforms don't pay very well, as most people probably know. And so hence the reason that I am partially independent and will be completely independent and looking to start to teach groups as well.
Thank you, Karen.
Possibly from next year.
Thank you, Karen. I really look forward to seeing how you grow and develop over the next years. It looks like you're in a real growth moment. Tasmia, you just joined the room and we've just done introductions. If you are able to unmute and introduce yourself, we would love that. And then we will start our conversation. Tasmia, are you available? Okay. Tasmia generally joins halfway through the session, so I guess she's running early today. So my lovely friends, let me tell you how I run beauty conversations for those of us who are new to this. These are the bravest sessions I could run because they're open. There's no content prepared for these sessions. These are general open forum discussions. I like to bring whatever's on my mind at the moment. Currently, that's this book here, Ken Robinson's Imagine If, thinking about the future of education, what it should be looking like. I'm also very focused on supporting mental health and well-being at the moment because we're preparing for Mental Health Awareness Day, which is next Tuesday, October 10th. We'll be running an event with Jacqueline McGill from Pursuit of Wisdom. It's free for you to attend. The morning session next Tuesday will be Overwhelm First Aid. Hands up if you think that sounds useful. Yeah. And then the afternoon, which is so glorious, is focusing on mindset for children. Now, what's lovely about Pursuit of Wisdom is that they've written their own children's book. And all of their coaching content comes through those children's books. So she actually sent me the whole set, and my little Sarah and I went through all the books last weekend and loved it. So I'm really looking forward to sharing that with you. So those are the things that are on my mind at the moment. Before I dive into this book and give you some quotes and ask your thoughts, I'd love to ask you to just drop in the chat what themes are in your mind at the moment so that we can see if we can sort of pull things together, tie some ideas together, really hit the spot. So in terms of your tutoring, please write in the chat for me, what's on your mind? Connection with others, Helen, that just defines you basically, dear. And I know that you mentioned before that you wanted to talk about taking on other tutors, whether, how, and when, right? So there's a lot to talk about there as well. What else is popping up in the chat, please? Mark, I can see that you're putting something in there. Brian, I can see that you're writing that something down as well. What's on your mind? Offering parent workshops. That's interesting. So Sarah also just started talking to parents, and I really feel that that holistic approach of not just the whole child, but actually the whole family definitely seems to be a direction that we should be exploring. Shola's looking into secondary schools applications. Which makes sense right now, doesn't it? That's the time of year. Are you supporting families with secondary school applications, Zola? Okay, awesome.
Yes.
Supporting yes, ADHD, yeah. Being ADHD Awareness Month. So Helen's been dropping some fantastic videos in the community, which I really, really appreciate, because there are so many good explainer videos from the different points of view of neurodiversity. And I think that it's a really rich theme to explore. Brian wants to connect to other tutors too. It can be lonely tutoring online. I can attest to that also. Lauren, students have mock exams, prelims in a month, and so she's stressed and anxious. No, the students are stressed and anxious. Lauren doesn't get stressed and anxious. Lauren puts a smile on her face, cheers them all up. Anna, creating learning materials. Are those learning materials that will enable you to build passive income, or is it learning materials to support your own students and your own tutoring?
They are actually both. So I find myself creating plenty of materials for my students. And I find that eventually once they've been used a few times and I know that they're very good, I can start monetizing them as well. Yeah. So it's both of them. I am now putting my materials in an accessible format for people who are not my students, so that they can have a taste of what I do in my classes if they cannot commit to the one-to-one.
That's really interesting. I know that Claire's developing something similar for maths, and it's really interesting to think about building something out, testing it with your students, and then rolling it out to a wider market. Mm. Karen, you said about growing your independent teaching business online, and I know that there'll be a lot of support for you in that. You must come to Wednesdays, where Georgina talks about building tutoring businesses. Gospel, concerns for parents and their financial situation affecting their mental health. So there's three themes in there that we speak to in Qualified Tutor: parents, financial situation, and the practical elements of maths, of academics, and mental health. I think that's a really, really powerful statement. So how you're supporting the student and therefore the parent? Are you talking about charging parents? Gospel, give us some more there.
Some of the parents are a bit anxious about the cost of living. It's not so much they are concerned about the cost of living, and so that is stressing them out. And I know from experience that spills to the children as well, and they get stressed and tense up. So yeah.
Fantastic, thank you. I'm sorry I misunderstood when you said about financial situation. I thought because you've spoken about financial education before, but certainly charging parents in a difficult economic climate is a difficult thing to be able to do. Mark, excited about being able to help and guide those in need. Do you mean students or other tutors or both? Mark, I'm waiting to hear from you. Ask to unmute.
Oh, yeah, okay. Sorry. Okay, so for everyone, it's great to meet whoever else is in the field or even not in the field. Where's my... statement. What did I write?
You said about you're excited about being able to help and guide those in need.
Yes,
and
I get the feeling
that there's a certain element of supporting the tutors as well that's in your
I'm happy to, given my limits, I'm happy to, to support as much as I can. Essentially, those in need seem to be, and I guess that's the theme, those in need. What is the need, what is required? When and where and how much, we do our best to, as tutors, we do our best to try and encourage and inspire and guide and lead and help, all of that. Before we get stuck into the academic year, I just get excited about it and I'm going, whoa, let me see what will happen. I kind of revise everything that I've learned. And I think, okay, well, what else do I need to bring in, you know, to new situations? Mm-hmm. As we know, currently it's dealing with AI.
Nobody mentioned AI yet. That's really, really helpful. Thank you.
And well, you know, it's, I'm not going to go into it, mm-hmm. but yeah, okay. There are issues, serious yeah. issues. You know, I am, you know, where I know where it's occurred, then I know what can, well, I try and look at what can be helped with. But there have been, you know, two complete rejections from, you know, universities because of that. And I think, and, you know, I mean, again, I'm, you know, excited to be a part of contributing to how we deal with this and, you know, the role of the tutor and, you know, helping education. That's what we do.
That's right.
Or education helps us, or we help education.
Yeah. Let me pause you there, Mark, if you don't mind. Thank you, because helping education is exactly where I want to go next. Yeah. But I just want to pull on Richard Marsh's statement in the chat there, which is the reluctant student.
Oh, right. Okay. Nearly all my students are reluctant students because that's why I'm asked to go in. And is that difference in expectation of the person commissioning and the student's expectation is so hard to handle when part of your job is to sort of support whatever situation the child's in. And so it is that they don't marry up properly, the expectations.
Very good. Okay. So I've been focusing a lot on that tension between what's expected of us in school and what we're able to deliver as adults and children. I see it in my own children. I see it in the members of this community, and I've seen it in my own life. And I think that that's a really interesting tension. Yeah. And it looks to all of us like it's breaking right now. I would say that recruitment and retention of teachers on the one hand, and attendance of schools, pupil attendance, on the other hand, is at the all-time low. And I would love to hear what your thoughts are on how we could reimagine school, how we should be reimagining education to be more fit for purpose. And isn't it telling that we have tutors of Latin, business studies, 11 plus, math, functional skills, alternative provision, financial well-being, English language, all coming together with this curiosity, enthusiasm, and passion. My kids laugh at me at how passionate I am, because I just feel like this is the moment. This is the moment where we can start redefining, and because it's cracking. So Claire, please tell us your thoughts.
It's the what if thing that you were mentioning there. I have a friend who is a head of biology in a private secondary school, and she's been doing a PhD in theory of teaching and all that sort of thing. And she got this fantastic opportunity in the summer to go to Estonia, which is supposed to be, I'm not sure whether it's the top, but in the top three in the world, which sounds really random, but they have no exam structure whatsoever, and everything is pupil led. And actually teaching is, she was saying, is not seen as a great profession to get into in the sense of a career choice. But she was saying the children decide what they're going to learn. And it sounds like it wouldn't work. But because they choose what they're going to learn, whether it's doing theatre, doing maths or whatever, they have enthusiasm. And she said while she was there, they were secondary school, 14, 16-year-olds. They put on a stage production and the teachers did nothing. She said they wrote scripts, they did filming of it, they did the lighting, the stage performance. She said, but in this country, you'd have a teacher doing all the organising, the planning and everything, but they formed their own committee and did the lot. And I just thought that really interesting. We are so like exam driven, and they're meant to have one of the best education systems in the world, and they don't have exams.
Yeah.
I don't know that they don't have any exams, but she said it's just not an exam driven system.
Fantastic. And that's really the point, isn't it? It's what's driving the system as opposed to what the other ingredients are. So assessment could be an ingredient without defining it. Helen, go ahead, and then we'll go to Sarah.
We've got to figure out all the buttons on my Zoom, don't I? Lower the
hand. Have you not spent much time on Zoom before?
No, not in the last few years anyway. No. Had other priorities. sorry. It feels like, just listen to that, that we've got into a place where we feel like we need to structure. And that's education. And that is parenting as well, that we need to structure our kids' time. Kids don't go out and play in the street endlessly like they used to, for fair reasons in some cases. We give them lots and lots of things, and they don't often go and play just with things. We structure their time, we structure it in school, we give them this, and sometimes we need them. We need scaffolds, we need things to do. But how would it look if we came at education from a, okay, we need to do this, how are you going to do it? And put it in their park. And then the scaffolds that we provide are, how do we go and research? How do you go and make sure that your sources are accurate and not complete twaddle? How do you present to an audience? We could do that in a really small scale as they're younger and then build on that. I think we would get more people interested that way in school, rather than having, I don't want to go to school because it's boring. I don't want to go to school because I've got maths today. That's one I hear quite a bit, unsurprisingly. maths is not people's favourite.
Surely they have maths every day.
They have maths most days, and that's why it's not their favourite. And they think it's boring. I'm not going to get into why maths isn't boring right now. That's a whole different talk that I can give. But if we did you're going to put on a show, as the example from Estonia was. Okay, how are you going to market that? How are you going to show it to other people? So that's your persuasive writing. And your computer skills for sticking
it up. I think, Helen, just to jump in there, it's quite similar to project-based learning that we would do in primary school. And it's actually where the curriculum was before it was where it is now. And I think the reason why they brought the national curriculum in was because it actually put a massive weight on the teachers for planning. It was so open-ended that you didn't, you know, the best teachers covered a great deal of ground. And possibly not everyone did. I'm going to go over to Sarah now, if that's okay with you. Sarah, go for it.
I was just thinking more, so I only left school in July, and I really feel that flexi schooling for a number of children could be beneficial, with sort of helping reduce that level of anxiety. So I think there's a lot of parents who aren't aware of flexi schooling. And also for, head teachers, leadership teams and things, to actually look at the benefits of what that flexi schooling would look like. Because I think when we first spoke to some of our teachers about it, they were just very much like, well, they can't just choose as and when they can come. But it's them understanding it's very structured. They come to school on certain days. They have that flexibility of being home as well. So I think that's something that perhaps needs to be spoken about a little bit more to try and
flexi schooling. Flexi schooling is actually a new concept for me. I've only come across it recently because I've got a friend who's a homeschooler, and she is struggling to get her child into school on a flexi school basis because he needs some of it and he doesn't need all of it. And sometimes she takes him to, you know, goes camping for a week with him, and there's plenty of learning in there as well. But the rigidity is what she's really railing against. Have you seen schools willing to take on homeschoolers for a flexi school format?
So how it was working with our school and a number of other schools within the kind of cluster really was that if a parent wanted that, kind of felt that they needed some time at home and some time in school, we did have it, you know, the timetable in itself wasn't flexible in the sense that what days they were going to come in school. So they could pick and choose throughout the week or take a whole week off. It would be, okay, they're maybe in school Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Monday, Wednesday, Friday, to give them some of that downtime. Usually children with a specific educational need that would need
one of mine is on a Yeah, one of mine is on a differentiated timetable at the moment, exactly as described. So he goes in at 11 every day. He misses half the curriculum, but at least he knows what to expect of himself. And there's a success criteria that he can cope with.
And I think it was that understanding, I think, as well, if we're kind of looking at what's the difference between a reduced timetable and actually flexi schooling, because they are two very different things. And when we were talking to parents about it, it was that kind of understanding. So I think perhaps if there was more understanding of what that involved and more flexibility in schools, I think perhaps we might be able to see more of that.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really interesting idea. And of course, blending with online as well. Julie, go ahead.
This is all reminding me of an article I read when I was training. So we're going back nearly 10 years ago. And when I spoke about it during my training and then tried to find the article again, I couldn't. So we're going from memory of an article I read a long time ago. Right? I'm just going to stick that in there first. There was somewhere abroad that had a really flexible school, and the article was setting them up as like, this is the way forward, this is what's going to happen. So students were given information on what they needed to learn, and they would do a large amount of that learning at home, and they'd have assignments to do, and they'd submit their assignments. And then instead of kind of like our feedback within school, it's like, okay, this is your dirt task. They then were given
sorry, just to clarify, DIRT is
directed improvement and reflection time.
Thank you. So that's a section of a lesson that secondary school teachers especially will often drop in there as part of the reflection.
Yeah, I've marked your work. This is what you're going to do to improve it. Even if it was perfect, this is what you're going to do to improve it, because that's what we do in schools nowadays, isn't it? So yeah, they had their kind of feedback and what they needed to do, but instead of having this really prescribed thing, there were options within the school timetable where this is going to be addressed at 11 o'clock on Monday, 2 o'clock on Tuesday, or I don't know, 9 o'clock on Wednesday. And the students went to the lessons that they felt they needed the help with.
So we're pointing to a lot more autonomy. So there's the flexibility is now self-direction. Is that what you're saying there?
Yeah, but this was, like I say, this article was probably a good 10 years ago. And I know at the time it kind of blew me away. It's like the timetabling of that must be massive. And there has to be a lot of structure behind the scenes that the students aren't seeing. But actually what the students would see was that they were choosing whether they were going into school on Monday, Tuesday or Wednesday to get the help that they thought they needed. And I'm just surprised that I've not heard anything about it since. Either it's doing really well and they're trying to keep it to themselves, or it all fell flat on its face and maybe it's not the way to go. I don't know.
Really interesting. Actually makes me think of this Centre Parks break that we're on at the moment. So for those of you who weren't in at the beginning of the meeting, I'm actually at Centre Parks at the moment, which is the first time I've ever been here. And what's so interesting is how much is taken care of. And yet I've got, you know, flexibility to go where I want, do what I want within those structures. So it's almost like we're sort of describing that kind of a model where it's really interesting to think about how restful it is to have the options, but not too many options. And, you know, the structures and the taken care of and it's all held. And yet it's a restful feeling for me because I've got the autonomy to, you know, choose which Starbucks to go to. Shola, go for it.
Thanks, Julia. You'd actually stole my word there. I was actually going to say options, you know.
sorry. I did not know that this is where this conversation was going here. I love it.
So I had a parent reach out to me last week whose daughter is in year 9, I think, and she got a letter from school. This is a school in Medway, by the way. I don't want to mention. Actually, it's okay. It's Fort Pete, one of the grammar schools. And she got a letter asking or sharing some of the options that they have available for every student. I think it's something new, moving from year 9 to year 10. So I think it's year 8, sorry. I mean, I think it's year 8 going to year 9. So the options that are available from either just following through in the school or going to another setting. I can't remember exactly what the word is. I was trying to look for the email that she sent to me, but I can't find it. So giving parents that option, not too many options, but options that would best suit their children rather than being rigid, you know, might be something that can help. But another thought flowing through my mind is also, how is this managed, or how would this be managed? Mm-hmm. You know, I know that there's definitely a need for a change, you know, but how could we move this forward?
It's interesting. Yeah. The word rigidity is really interesting. The flexible on the one hand and the rigidity on the other, and getting, you know, one of my kids is finding it overwhelming here, having too many options. So getting that balance right and building structures that each child can cope with, and then the logistics of it. I mean, are we all pointing? You see, what's funny is that when I write a LinkedIn post about this conversation afterwards, the theme that I will pull on is tutors arguing for flexibility. It's the definition of tutoring. The fact that we're all coming from different delivery models and delivering different systems, different topics, is a definition of flexible and you know, options and opportunities, different opportunities. And so it's almost like a school of tutors that we're pointing to, if you could organize such a thing. Claire, go for it.
It was sort of rounding up what Julie was saying, and it occurred to me that we do our education to our children, whereas the other systems, the children do the education. And that also links in with tutoring, because I think a lot of our tutoring contracts are with people or students that want to do it. Okay, sometimes it might be more parent-led, but I think the vast majority of my students come from students that are struggling themselves, and they've gone to their parents and said, I'm struggling, or they're upset, and this is the solution they come up with. So that again is them doing the education rather than it being done to them.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely right. Let me share with you a little bit from Ken Robinson's book. This is not book club, this is a prompt. He talks about, you'll see what he talks about. Despite the astronomical changes in circumstances between the Industrial Revolution and the 21st century, formal systems of education by and large remain structurally the same. Students and teachers spend huge amounts of their time in conditions that have been designed for a mass production of standardized product, the student, that by design focuses on output and yield. While industrial farms prioritize quantity, size, and cost over quality, health, and natural ecosystems, we prioritize test data, attendance, and college admission over well-being, creativity, and learning. While industrial farms pump crops and livestock with vast amounts of antibiotics, we prescribe mood stabilizing and attention enhancing drugs to children to compensate for the very real levels of anxiety, stress, and disengagement they are experiencing. What are your thoughts?
Well, now I don't want to go to school. Now I feel like I'm on the farm.
I think that the first flip that he brought there that I'd not seen before was that usually it's compared to industrial factories. But the comparison to industrial farming is, I think, much more interesting. And the idea of focusing on output and yield rather than on well-being and learning and growth is, I think, really, really profound. What are your thoughts?
I'm thinking, how do we get parents and students to buy in after all this time?
Yeah.
The factory, the production line, that's the word I'm looking for, of education. You go in at 5-ish, 4 or 5, somewhere around that, come out at 16, 17, 18 into the world of work. And the rest of the time, you've got to turn up in uniform, tuck your shirt in your skirt. Oh, that's going to be interesting, or whatever.
Sure, but you have to roll your skirt up as well. No, that's one of the things.
Only when you're in that certain demographic, you roll your skirt up. When you're in the younger demographic, you're lucky if you're wearing a skirt over your trousers.
Yeah, and you have to pull your socks up.
Oh yeah, don't. That's an interesting dress choice this morning. So I'm kind of...
How do we get the parents to buy in is the question.
Parents to buy into this.
So Sarah, Shola, you talk to parents all the time. How do parents understand? You know, I ran a think tank recently of parents, and I started by telling them that school was broken, and they all wanted to go home because they didn't want to hear it. Go on, Sarah.
I guess...
Sorry, you go, Shola.
Oh, okay. I mean, what I think a lot of parents are thinking is, what are the alternatives? What are the options? So a lot of, well, some of the parents I speak to on a regular basis are thinking, so how do we move forward? I mean, I feel we're all in the same situation, or the same boats, thinking, okay, what are the alternatives? What are the options? How do we move forward from here? So yeah, I guess there will be a lot of parents who would be worried to buy in because they're thinking, what's going to happen? I mean, the children are at the forefront of their minds. But there are some parents who would say, yes, let's go for it. You know, we definitely need this change. We can see it. We are ready to jump in.
That's right. I think it's interesting, you know, this is a really abstract conversation, right? It's the theory of things, and it's a group of people who have been in education for decades. It's very, very difficult when you're on the sharp end of making sure, firstly, that your child is where they're supposed to be, and secondly, that you're setting them up with all the opportunities that they need going forward. Sarah and then Brian, go for it.
I think there will always be that core group of parents, you know, that you speak to, and they're very much, I just need my child to be able to. And I think if you are able to adjust your curriculum and your, you know, and your school to be able to allow them to go into education in that way, if you've got a flexible, and at the end of the day, it comes from the top, if the head teacher that your child goes to is, you know, it has a good SEN background, knowledge, and is flexible, then you will get more of your children into school. So I think you're always going to have those parents that are very much, when you talk to them, if you can just do this, we're happy for them to come in. And then you're going to have those parents who are institutionalized, like many of us are, that you go to school for 8:30, you leave at 3:30, and that's how school works. And they've got to go to work. They just need them to be in school. So you've got that whole kind of, it's not just about them going into school for education for parents. It's actually, I need my child to go to school because I have got to go and work. So you've got to be flexible at school. So it's just, it's such a, you open a massive can of worms, because what works for one family won't work for another family. So it's so difficult.
It's so difficult, but it's so important. There's nothing more important. And there's nothing wrong with admitting that there's a certain element of school which is childcare. There can't possibly be, because it's part of how our systems are built. Brian, did you have your hand up? Where's Brian gone?
Comes in as well, isn't it, with parents? You know, if everybody's flexible in their jobs, then that would make a better education system, because actually there's that flexibility, isn't there?
Yeah. But again, you know, Helen joked that she had legs. It is important that we remember real life too. It's important that our children are socialized. It's important that they learn to act, you know, to participate in team activities, and that there's also schedules and routine and you know, predictability in their life structure. So like you said, the difference between a flexi school and a reduced timetable, just that sort of a structure that is built around personal needs. Brian, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's that rigidity, that kind of, I realised why I wasn't happy in education after nearly 28 years or so. So, you know, I had to teach year 9 history on a Monday morning at 9 o'clock, whether I was ready or not. Or whether they were ready, actually, or not. And I think the fact that schools are so rigid, and, you know, I went to school in the 70s, and things haven't changed that much since the 70s, have they, really, to be perfectly honest. We still go to lessons on a certain time. And as you say, we do need some sort of a timetable and planning, and, you know, we can't have a completely flexible timetable in a school of 1,000 students. It's almost impossible to do, but somehow to inject some sort of flexibility would be better for everybody, students and staff. And I mean, there is a halfway house of tutoring. That's one of the reasons why I love it, is that I wasn't very well during the week, so I cancelled some of my lessons, or rather, I postponed them, and I'm doing them later on in a week, and they're not missing it. They just, I wasn't at my best, so I don't see why I should struggle trying to get through a lesson. And sometimes my students do the same. They phone me up and say, I can't make it today. I'm not very well. That's fine. We won't do a lesson. In schools, you have to do that. You know, I've taught so many lessons in the past when I wasn't well. And I don't think that's good on anyone, really. Right. So, I know I've got to go now. I've got to teach now, on my fault.
Enjoy it. And we hope you stay well, because that point about wellness is really important. Helen, before, and Claire, before, I'm just going to share with you something else that I picked up from this book. So I didn't ask us to start the conversation with defining education, because I think it's actually an impossible task. What Ken says here is that, I'm on first name terms with him now, is education must enable students to understand the world around them and the talents within them, so that they can become fulfilled individuals and active, compassionate citizens. And what he talks about in terms of competencies, Helen, are you able to type this for me? I won't be checking your spelling. He talks about 8 core competencies that I absolutely love, and they are curiosity, creativity, criticism, communication, collaboration, compassion, composure, and citizenship. Thank you, Dan. I think that's really, really interesting set of competencies. You know, if you think about what Helen said before about being able to speak on a stage, right? Being able to plan a production, all of those competencies, behaviors that may or may not show up in our curriculum. And are they supporting students to be more fit for the future of education? Claire, what are your thoughts?
It was just building on what Brian said about being well. It reminded me of a year 6 student. I have no idea what had gone on before he came online with his mum, but I could see that he'd been crying. And within 2 or 3 minutes, it was obvious there was no maths going on today. And I literally just said to his mum, I have an hour at this time tomorrow. Shall we come back tomorrow? It's not worth doing any maths with him right now. His mind's not on it. And she was so grateful, because she was so set in that system. Your tutoring is at 4 o'clock on a Monday and you must have it at 4 o'clock on a Monday. But we ended up with the next day, she'd never got to the bottom of what was wrong with him. He was as bright as anything and had a good maths lesson.
Unbelievable story, Claire. Unbelievable. The flexibility, the child-centeredness, the intention, the trustworthiness. Stunning. Helen, go for it.
I should stop trying to do 3 things at once, including correct my spelling.
You did very well. And don't we love that we can edit that now?
So composure is definitely not spelt correctly.
But isn't composure a good word?
Great word. I've had that with students. I've had students who have not been in a place to learn when I've turned up, and I might not have had the diary space to say we'll do it tomorrow, but I've gone and played my flags game with this one kid who had an obsession with flags. I now know more about European flags than I ever did before. Just don't test me on Eastern Europe. But we do that for an hour because it was more important to build the relationship with the student, to get them to trust me and to know it was okay. But parents don't know any different. We said this a couple of weeks ago. Parents don't know that it's okay to pick a tutor that fits them. Parents don't know that they can pick a tutor that fits their timetable. Parents don't know these things because they have come through the same system that their kids are now going through, where you have to turn up, you've got no freedom of things. So I kind of went down, do we need a functional education to be able to put in those 8 dodgily spelled words that we've got there? Those 8 things. And I know, yes, it might require more planning, in which case we need more investment, we need more teachers, but we need that anyway. support what we've got. we need kids to have a functional level of maths. Sorry, I know, but they need to be able to function in society. They need to know when the government are talking out their backsides when it comes to stats, or any other agency, to be fair. Stats are great for making up. They need to understand what they are being told. They need to understand these mathematical concepts. They need to budget. They need to mortgage. They're, all of those sort of things, it's all maths. So they need a functional level of maths. They probably don't need quadratic functions unless they're going down that route. So we need kids to have a functional level of maths. They need a functional level of literacy to be able to read and write and communicate. But we probably don't need to go into the depths that we do in our curriculum. Is our curriculum too bloated? Are we too rigid? Do we play around and say, here are the options for the maths, here are the options for the English, and you've got project work that you can fit in around that? And I don't know. So
I think you've put so much together there. You've put so much together there. And of course, you know, the answer to how do we make this happen, or how do we reimagine education together, is through these conversations. It's the snowball that happens when each of us are engaging in all of these conversations. And I think Helen's so right when she says that parents, but also we, grew up in the system, and therefore we struggle to reimagine it. We really, really struggle to think out of this paradigm that is our existence and try to understand what it is that we should be doing differently. And the more that we can focus on the little people and their actual needs, the closer we'll get to that. But what it seems to me, and you guys have heard me say this more than once, the reason why I'm obsessed with this format of safe, skilled, and supported is because when we have those three things in place, they're like Maslow's hierarchy. When you have those three things in place, you have the space, the well-being to reimagine education. So when you feel like it's safe to ask a question or not contribute because you don't feel ready, that safe environment is so, so powerful in terms of feeling calm enough to take things to another level. When you feel skilled, you feel that you've got the expertise, the qualifications, and the context to take things to the next level, to show parents what it could be like, to show students what it could be like, to go and create your own online school because you're confident of the skills that you create, of, you know, of that you've developed over time. You know, I really believe that the solution to imposter syndrome is just to skill up. Just show yourself what you know and articulate what you know. And then that supportiveness gives us the infrastructure to push the boat forward together. Now, in this conversation, my takeaway is us understanding the importance of, what did you just say, Helen?
I'm also watching this in the, not watching it, I'm seeing the conversation in the LinkedIn as it streams to LinkedIn.
Oh, so, so cool. So then tell me what it says before I follow
up. A little bit of lag, but Jacqueline McGill is commenting as we go that she's loving the conversation, that saying that the education system isn't working and that we are trapped. Teachers and children are trapped in it, and the industrial farming idea is interesting analogy, but she also says that we need to give everyone a permission slip to live the life they need.
So I don't know if you've seen Dear Evan Hansen. I've been listening to the music at the moment, and the mum says on the first line, she says, does anybody have a roadmap? I don't know if you can tell, but I'm flying blind. And really, that's because we were taught that there's a roadmap, but there's no roadmap. There's no roadmap right now. We need to teach our children that there's no roadmap, and we need to be brave about that. My closing thoughts for you, my lovely friends. Firstly, I love how full this room was today. It tells me that there's an appetite for these conversations, and that we're a bunch of professionals who are committed to pushing this boat forward together. And that's a thing of absolute joy. The second thing is how much strength it takes to ask a question and not answer it. How much power it takes to actually just hold the space for each other to find our own answers. So I don't think that the world needs more gurus. I don't think that the world needs more speakers standing on platforms telling you what they've learned. And I think that the world needs more community. I think that the world needs more quirkiness. I think that the world needs us to hold space for each other to to do our own thinking and find our own solutions. I think that Sarah's solutions are different to Richard's solutions. I think that there are more than one right answer. We grew up thinking that the answers are all binary, black and white. Easier to do that. But if I've learned one thing today, it's that there's an appetite for variety. And that if we can hold our minds open and help our children to stay open to the discomfort of no answer and actually look for variety, we'll find a model of education that is more flexible, more well-suited, and less industrialized. So that, my friends, is what we've discussed in QT Conversations today. I do hope you'll come back next Thursday. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you, awesome LinkedIn people. I'm going to start pressing some stop buttons now. Thank you for joining us. Bye.
Thanks,
Richard. Thanks, Claire.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks everyone.
Anna. Thanks, Helen. Thanks, Julie. Thanks, Gospel.